hockey for the first time since March the 11th. Exhibition hockey last night three games got underway. We saw Philly beat Pittsburgh in overtime. Leafs beat the Habs by a score of 4-2. And out west in the late game, Edmonton 2 for McDavid beats the Flames by a score of 4-1. For the Toronto-Montreal game, interesting to see the goalies went the entire way for both teams.
Yeah.
Guess not a huge surprise, but in all the other games, the goalies were split. For Montreal, 0-6 in the power play. They get one as a power play expired.
Yeah.
Allowed two shorties. That's probably what Claude Julien is most concerned about this morning.
Yeah, and sure have the Pittsburgh Penguins a little nervous after watching that power play.
Yeah, exactly. Without further ado, let's get the opinions of the man who hosts the Montreal Forum midday show on TSN 690. Tony Marinaro joins us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, Tony?
You guys didn't make the playoffs. You didn't make the plan, and you're still teasing the Montreal Canadiens.
That's all we got, Tony. That's all we got at this point.
Thank God you didn't get the first pick overall. The arrogance would have killed us. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're good, thanks. And thanks a lot for coming on. Before I ask you what your thoughts were on last night's game, were you excited to sit down and watch this thing start to finish? Like, are you, like, totally in on hockey right now?
I was. I got to tell you the truth. The only little bit of a downfall is I wasn't on my sofa at home watching it. I was in the stands at the park with my son playing soccer, but watching it on my mobile on my Bell 5 app. I watched the entire game. It was kind of weird, right, with no fans in the stands. But you know, I think the National Hockey League, in terms of the production, all things being considered, and the crowd noise that they put in, I thought it was pretty good. But the one thing that, you know, the players talked about at the end of the game, so was I excited? Yes. But it's kind of like difficult for a fan without any fans in the stands watching. And the players and the coaching staff talked about that as well. You know, that they're going to have to really find a way. You know, they're always motivated to play, of course, but if those fans give them an extra 10% or 20% or 30% adrenaline, now they're going to have to find a way to compensate for that and to, you know, pump themselves up by themselves without those fans. So it was kind of weird, but after 141 days off, man, it was really, really nice to watch.
Tony, I guess you'd almost take the players back to what it would feel like in minor hockey, where the exchange of energy is just going to be between the athletes themselves and, as you said, nothing to do with the fans.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And the team that's going to be able to, you know, add that element to, you know, their game is the team that's going to go the furthest. The team that's going to be the mentally strongest in terms of, you know, blocking everything out. The team that's willing to put up with all the conditions. The team that's willing to be away from their families, all that. You know, the team that's willing to do all of those things is the team that's going to have the most success.
So you had one eye on your son's soccer game last night, one eye on your cell phone watching the Habs game. From what you were able to ascertain, from what you saw from Montreal,
I can correct. Since it wasn't a game and it was a practice,
yes,
I had both eyes on the Canadiens.
I stand corrected then. I mean, does that team have any chance against a team like Pittsburgh? The team you saw last night, at least.
I watched the Pittsburgh game too earlier in the day, and even though they lost against the Philadelphia Flyers, I thought for the first two periods of the game, the pace was really, really impressive. Philadelphia is really good too, by the way. If I had to just season, and based on the one game we saw last night, they got no chance. If I had to give you a different answer, I would tell you that, you know, it's full. So anybody could beat anybody. You play the first game, and Crosby and Malkin get hurt. If the Canadiens are not going to beat the Penguins at that point, then Houston, we got a problem. So there's a lot of things that can happen in a series. But the Canadiens had so many bad habits during the regular season. A bad habit of giving up a goal in the first minute of a period. And I think their record was 0 wins and 13 losses when they did. They had a bad habit of giving up a shorthanded goal. It happened like 5 times in a game, and I think they lost all 5 games when they did. They had a bad habit of giving up a goal in the final minute of play of a period, and when they did, I don't remember the stat there, but they had lost all their games as well. Like, they haven't won a game when giving up a goal in the first minute, giving up a goal in the last minute, or giving up a shorthanded goal in a game. When either one of those three scenarios happen, they never won a game. and or maybe they won one out of like a total of 20 games. And so they did all that again last night. Instead of giving up one shorthanded goal, they gave up two. I mean, you've been off for 141 days. You're excited. You come back and they, you know, Ben Chiarot pinches. Brendan Gallagher doesn't cover for him. Shea Weber's alone on a two-on-one. He goes to John Tavares, who's got the puck, and passes, and leaving Mikhailuk alone, Mikhaev, and they score. Like, everything that you can do wrong in a play, they did it after 33 seconds.
Tony, if we're 5 years ago and I was reading all the reports going in, they could end up stealing the series because of Carey Price. Is that still the Carey Price, or is he still just now a good NHL goaltender?
I'd say no, that's not Carey Price anymore. But the National Hockey League players tell you in a poll, for the most part, about 40% of them or whatever it was, voted that Carey Price built the best goalie in the National Hockey League. I want to be fair and tell you that he has an average team, and I want to be fair and tell you that he has an average defense. That's fair. But at the same time, we have to add in another. So is he the goalie that was the goalie 5 years ago when he were 4 years ago, 5 years ago when he won all those individual awards? Or maybe even 6 years ago. Now time flies. I think it was 2014. No, he's not that goalie. But at the same time, I don't think this National Hockey League is a league where a goalie can be as dominant as he was that year when he won all those individual awards. I think offense has taken over the National Hockey League. Offense, speed, youth, skill, enthusiasm. I think those are all things that have taken over the game. I think the game has opened up, and you don't build around goalies anymore. You just don't. You build around franchise centermen, number one centermen. So is he the goalie that he was? I don't think so. I don't think it's the league that it was, though. I don't think he's got a great team. I think it's a combination of many things.
Talking to Tony Marinaro from TSN 690 in Montreal. So the Habs have hoped, since they drafted him, that Jesperi Kotkaniemi can be that number one center, especially a center with some size that they've been waiting for forever. He got to play last night. Again, is it way too early to have any expectations for him for this playoff?
It's way too early, but he's not Brady Tkachuk. Like, that's it's way too early, but he's not Brady Tkachuk. If that's where we're going to go with this, I think they made the wrong choice. And I know that I shouldn't be saying that when a player is 20 years old or 19 years old and he's the second year of his career. I know I shouldn't be saying that. I know he still will get stronger and bigger, and I know he'll still get faster, and I know he'll still add to his shot. Brady Tkachuk's going to do the same thing. And I understand that Brady Tkachuk's more evolved in his physique. And you didn't ask me about Brady Tkachuk, so, but I'm going there. look, he showed some flashes yesterday. He actually came back. He's been one of the talks of camp, to tell you the truth, because when the Canadians broke off, he was sent down to the American Hockey League. He had the sophomore jinx. He had an injury in the offseason. It's twice that he has a knee injury. He showed up to camp the first year around, coming off of a knee injury. His skating suffered. He had another one last year, his skating suffered, and then he'd gone down to Laval, and he suffered a spleen injury, and he's had a ton of injuries, and in my opinion, this player was just rushed into the National Hockey League. And teams do it all the time, and the Canadians have done it a couple of times with him, and now it's Galchenyuk, but you take a look at some of the players that wait a little bit longer to break into the National Hockey League at 20 or 21. When they get there, they're ready to go. This kid came in. He hit a wall in his first season. In the last 26 or 27 games, he did nothing. He got hammered on one occasion. I think he suffered a concussion. Then he suffered a knee injury. Then he suffered a spleen injury, all within 2 years. It's you know, when he suffered the concussion, he got tossed to the ice like he wasn't even there. Like, and yes, it was, you know, a big defenseman with Colorado who had 50 or 60 pounds on him, but just he wasn't ready to protect himself like guys that come into the league are ready to do when they come into the league at a later age. So in my opinion, they made the wrong move, and hopefully for him, it's not going to hurt him long term.
And I look at that, Tony, because I think long-term he could be like David Krejci. He had some of the same issues. You got to wait for the maturity. But is this taking on, for different reasons, a life of its own, similar to Doug Wickenheiser and Denny Savard?
No, I don't think it's to that extent, because Denny Savard had an unbelievable career. Doug Wickenheiser did not. Denny Savard was from Montreal. It's not like they took his Perry Kotkaniemi to pass on somebody from Montreal. So I think it's a different situation. I understand your point, your question. But no, I think it's different. And look, I think Kotkaniemi will be a good player. But I think Brady Tkachuk's going to score 40 goals. And how many guys are going to score 40 goals in this league? Less than 10?
With Tony Marinaro from TSN 690. So, you know, and I'm sure there's been a huge topic since the unnamed NHL team won the NHL draft lottery. What percentage of people that you talk to every day on your show want the Habs to lose this series against Pittsburgh to give them a 1-8 chance of getting the first pick?
100%. Nobody wants them to win. Nobody. I'm sure Jeff Molson does, and I'm sure Mark Bergevin and Claude Julien, but they don't call my show. But everyone else who calls my show and who texts my show and who tweets me and personal friends who message me, everyone wants them to lose, because they figure a 12.5% chance at Lafreniere is 12% more chance than winning the Stanley Cup. And at the end of the day, you play to win the Stanley Cup. And the Canadians have what percent chance to win the Stanley Cup? 0.5%? 1%? What chance do they have? And I understand, you know, the adage is you make the playoffs and everyone's got an equal chance. I get that. And teams that got in late before have gone on great runs. I get that too. But realistically, the Canadians have too many flaws in their game. Yeah, there could be a fan or two that might say, yeah, you know what, the playoffs will be a great experience for some of these young players. Let them go on a run and let them play and gain experience. Which young player is Claude Julien going to play a lot in the playoffs? Kotkaniemi? No. Mete? No. He's only going to play Suzuki. So this run, so that Suzuki can get playing time? No. So to answer your question, everyone I speak to would rather the Canadians lose than give themselves a chance at Lafreniere.
Tony, do you think the league was short-sighted in not allowing Romanov to play? And also, I made the point, at the end of the day, would Claude Julien even play him if he was there? I know he's there, but if he was eligible?
I think he would play him. I think he'd play him ahead of Mete on the left side. Because Kulak is playing with Petrie on the second pairing and Sherrod's playing with Weber, so process of elimination. Romanov being a left-handed defenseman, Mete would be out of luck. Look, I understand the league's position. I just think this is the way I see it. Sometimes there's too much red tape and too much bureaucracy. The Montreal Canadiens drafted Romanov. The Montreal Canadiens signed Romanov to a contract. Let him play, man.
Well, to that, how do you explain Robertson? Because I'm on the bandwagon. I'm exactly that, Tony. But how do you explain Robertson playing for Toronto, and why should Romanov not be eligible?
I still don't get it. Yeah. That's the truth. I mean, I don't get it. And, you know, in a league, for a league that needs as many people watching as possible, not to say that people are going to tune in just to watch Romanov, but it just gives you an extra added interest to see a player who wasn't with the team coming from another league and to see how he's going to fit in. So, you know, I don't lose any sleep over it. I mean, quite, yeah, to tell you the truth, but would have been nice. I mean, I don't get it. If a team drafts a player and they sign a player, I don't care when, I don't care how, I don't care which date, I don't care what age, I don't care where he's from. He belongs to them, and they should be able to use him whenever they want.
All right.
They didn't go to Russia and steal him here.
Yeah, great point.
You know, they can get on a plane, kidnap him, and bring him to Toronto, and the authorities are looking for him.
It's not Peter Svoboda at the draft in 85.
No, not Peter Svoboda, the draft in 85.
It's not. All right, what's your prediction for the series?
Yesterday, before watching the Canadiens game, my prediction was, because someone had asked me, and I said Pittsburgh in five, because I tried to show the Montreal Canadiens as much respect as possible, but this morning I'm leaning more towards four.
Okay, I was going to say, I thought you were going to say Pittsburgh in two.
I'll go with four. I still think they'll find one way to muster out a game. Would I be shocked if they pull this out? Professional sports, anything can happen, but once again, I maintain, you know, winning one series is possible if you don't have the team. It's possible. Winning a Stanley Cup, if you don't have the team, it's almost impossible. And the goal when you play hockey is to win the Stanley Cup. So if the Canadiens are going to play a round or two and then have no chance at Lafreniere because they're not even eligible, I too, like everyone else, would rather see them lose and have a 12.5% chance.
All right. Well, we'll see starting Saturday. Appreciate the time, Tony. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks, guys.
All right. There's Tony Marinaro from the Montreal Forum on TSN 690 on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today.
Yeah, and JR, I look at this and think, okay, if you are Montreal, if you went into a tough grind and in five you end up beating the Pittsburgh Penguins, I know for teams in the past, including St. Louis, they kind of grind it out to get to a playoff. But I still think for those teams that go five in the first round, the wear and tear to go another four rounds of best of seven series,
yeah.
I think it's almost all, especially the lesser likes like Montreal, it's just going to catch up with you at some point.
Well, think about it. I mean, if you went to max, if you played in the play-in series and you go to max games in every single series, you're talking about playing 33 games.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Montreal is just not built to do that.
No, not at all.
All right, 9:30, we'll take a break. Come back with much more. We'll look at this day in sports history, celebrate some sports birthdays as well. Don't forget In the Box coming up after 10, the drive this afternoon at 2. And Eric Macromella is back with another edition of Offside. It is always great look at the business and legal side of the world of sports tonight at 6 o'clock. It's all straight ahead right here on TSN 1200. A reminder, by the way, that Friday is a text to win with our friends at Equinel. We had a chance to get out there, Simmer, last week to play a round of golf and enjoy everything that they got going on at Equinel. Voted Ottawa's best public golf course, best layout, best condition, best greens, best par four, which I asked, was that number one, which is, for those that have played Equinel, is the one where your opening tee shot is over a rather large body of water,
yeah.
Which for some people is the most intimidating shot in golf, is anything over water.
Especially to start the day off.
Yeah, exactly. And if you haven't warmed up, which we did not do.
No.
Did not get an answer on that, but from Triple H says, hey guys, my buddies have been members at Equinel for a number of years, and they call holes 7, 8, and 9... the Tim Hortons triple-double holes, and not for how they like their coffee.
Yeah.
That comes from Triple H, which I was thinking, okay, all three of those involve yet another body of water. And very easy to double up all those.
Yeah, 8 ends up being the nice par 3, right?
Yes.
Tight, whole lot of water, and then 9, well, all three of them, as you say, work around that massive pond.
Yeah, 5 sets of tees from all the holes at Equinel, so no matter your level of golf expertise, you can find something favorable to play. You can book your tee time today at equinel.ca, proudly managed by TMSI Sports Management. And again, we'll have a text to win contest coming up Friday here on TSN 1200 for you to win a round of golf for you and three buddies at Equinel to get out there and enjoy it. All right, 9:37. Blue Jays beat the Nationals again last night, 5-1. All right, 2 wins in a row, 3-2 on the season, knocking off the world champs. All good. And tonight is the night that everybody's been eagerly awaiting because it is the Major League debut of super uber prospect Nate Pearson, number 7 ranked prospect in all of Major League Baseball, will start for the Blue Jays tonight.
You know, it's pretty calm right now. Obviously, you know, I'll probably get nervous. It'll be good nerves, like excitement, everything leading up to that. So I'm very looking forward to matching up with Max Scherzer. You know, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, pitcher I looked up to a lot growing up and just seeing him around the league. So it'd be cool to pitch against him and pitch against the reigning national champs.
All right, 101 innings last year for Nate Pearson. Started at single A, moved to double A, finished at triple A. 101 innings, 119 strikeouts. So he can get a swing and a miss when he needs some. And he has been eagerly anticipated for a couple of years now by Blue Jay fans, and tonight you get a chance to look at him.
Yeah, and that slow process from a few years ago, thought, oh, they've got the formation of a staff led by Mr. Sanchez. My gosh, that could not have gone in a worse direction. Now this, the start, and on the broadcast last night, it was just fun that they had realized that he was starting on Wednesday because his mother had put it on Instagram. Yeah. That was the way that the baseball world had found out.
Cat is out of the bag. Thanks, Mom. Really appreciate that. Meanwhile, the Miami Marlins, the official word for Major League Baseball, no more games the rest of the week. The entire week has been wiped out from their schedule right through Sunday. At the very least, four more players tested positive yesterday. So in total now, that's 17 players and staff that are infected with the COVID-19. And so for the Marlins, if they can get back on the field next Monday, it's a scramble just to find enough players. Especially decent players to be able to fill, fulfill a major league caliber roster. That'll be the big thing. And again, I think it's a big if that they're back on the field on Monday.
And for all the damage Derek Jeter has done to the franchise since he showed up, maybe he comes back and plays.
There you go. I mean, now you're thinking.
Everything he touches, it turned to crap since he showed up in Florida.
Yeah.
It has just been a gong show.
Done nothing but cut costs. Yeah. So the results have been, because they were supposed to be playing Baltimore Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in a home and away series. Well, they're not playing those games, so now Baltimore's got nobody to play. So Baltimore's going to end up playing the Yankees now. The Yankees were supposed to play the Phillies. Well, the Phillies aren't going to play until Friday because the Phillies played the Marlins, and even though they tested all the players and didn't have any positive tests, they want to err on the side of caution, so the Phillies won't play until Friday. And who are they playing on Friday? Oh, the Blue Jays. Amazing how that all comes around.
Yeah.
So, again, the dominoes are continuing to fall for Major League Baseball. Not many of us are very optimistic they'll find a way to see it all through. Now, we can say, from a positive point of view, that there have been no positive cases other than those with the Marlins in the first week of the season. But again, they're flying in and out of all of these hot spots all over the place. Hard to think that number is going to be able to continue.
No, and hey, fortunate based on the times, though, at least logistically, just point the bird, fly wherever you have. Hotels are pretty much empty, so anything you want to put together, and I guess it's just a question of who's running your TV and flip it on and call it a game, but you're right, and this is really when this was all set up, it was just hard to kind of comprehend of why wouldn't you go into one place and maybe play 30 games between four or five or six or seven teams, whatever it was. It just, none of this made any sense for what's happened in the United States, and it's really kind of that denial that's coming out of the White House.
Yeah. Now, you're not a big Aaron Rodgers guy, correct? Or you're not liking the way that he's kind of been carrying himself the last couple of years?
Oh, I think he's a super arrogant guy, am I a fan of the talent? For sure. I feel like there's a little something there. He's certainly no Tom Brady.
No, well, nobody is really in your world. Aaron Rodgers did an interview yesterday with the NFL Network with Kyle Brandt in particular. And, of course, there's been a lot of, certainly controversy in Green Bay about their decision to choose Jordan Love, the quarterback, in the first, and not only to choose him, but trade up, which kind of has led everybody to think of, well, what's the future for Aaron Rodgers now? He just signed a contract extension through 2023. For $135 million, I think it is, or thereabouts. It's a ton of money. He's got no guaranteed money, though, beyond the 2020 season. So Aaron Rodgers was asked about the decision to draft Jordan Love as his prospective replacement.
Quarterbacks are playing earlier. It gives, gives some latitude for young coaches and GMs to play their guys. And I get it. I really do. Like, I don't harbor any ill will about it. Like, was I bummed out? Of course. Mm-hmm. Who wouldn't be? Mm-hmm. I wanted to play my entire career in Green Bay. I love the city. I grew up there. Really, got there when I was 21. I'm 36 now. A lot changes during that time. But look, I get it. I see it completely clearly, and I'm not bitter about it. It just kind of is what it is.
So there you go. And note that one part he says in there. That's the part that twigged for me. Was I wanted to play my entire career in Green Bay. Like, he's already recognizing, and he said, he's been very upfront, I feel like I can play into my 40s.
Yeah.
He's 36 right now. That's him saying, I'm not playing my entire career for the Packers. I already know that.
No, and the one that I took away was in you throw out the young coach and their guy. You mix it in with that. And here I'll say from that, like, what professional athlete and one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, who wouldn't be hurt? And at this stage of your career, you're looking around and people have said they haven't supported him or given him enough weapons. Well, what did Tom Brady do? He packed up and left town. of course you'd look at this and say in a first round. The other trip that they had at the draft, which was interesting, is somebody asked, I think the coach, hey, why do you end up drafting the quarterback? He said, well, he was there when we were picking. They said, no, you actually traded up. Like, oh, okay. Hey, the righty's on the wall. I can't imagine that this is going to go past this season. I mean, at the end of the season, he's going to be cut and he'll move on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they went to the NFC Championship game last year. And we'll see, you know, first of all, is there going to be a season upcoming? Yeah. It's going to be a season unlike any other. But if they are able to put together another good year like that and maybe get as far as they can, I mean, or as far as they did last year, is that a reason to change at this point? Again, he's under contract and for 4 more years.
Yeah.
But he's got no guaranteed money beyond this year.
No, and in the case of a young quarterback, like how long? Is apprenticing for a year or two? What I guess you probably never thought is that he's feeling exactly the way that Brett Favre felt back in the day, right? And he probably in his Green Bay career didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah, do you guys buy into the theory too that the worst time to draft a quarterback is when you need one?
Yeah.
Like that's the whole, I like that idea of it and grabbing a guy you like. But when you hear more of Aaron Rodgers' comments from that podcast of he got excited when he saw them trading up, the receivers that he liked, he was doing his own homework on some of these college guys that they could have drafted, and then he got a text from the marketing guy, and he's like, yeah, quarterback, and he's like, he poured himself a big glass of tequila, and he was like, are you kidding me?
Four fingers high on the glass, right?
Yeah.
Is that what he said?
That's about right.
That's a stiff glass right there. Yeah. Because he knew the calls were coming.
Exactly.
And I guess with athletes, guys, we just talked about Kotkaniemi and development. Do I think this is going to go in the wrong direction? I really do. And if you look historically, and from Steve Young, different circumstance, but I'll use the case Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. Was it good that they were afforded the ability to come in? And obviously Tom Brady, for where he's picked in the seventh round, to apprentice and come in versus being forced. Like, I don't have any confidence that Burrow in Cincinnati is going to, this is going to end well for him. I don't even know necessarily if he's a star talent, but they're going to rush him right in. And most times, just like RG3, it'll probably end in injury.
Yeah. But we've also seen a lot of successful cases where young quarterbacks may be able to play. It's more based on, if I drafted a quarterback high in the draft, I would only play him in the first year if I had a strong offensive line and I had a few weapons. I don't necessarily have to be a great team, but I don't want the guy to get thundered. First of all, from an injury point of view, but secondly, maybe more importantly, just from a confidence point of view. You can crush a guy early if he's just under duress for the entire year. I had that, I would feel, even if I thought, hey, look, I'm only going to get 5 wins this year.
Oh, for sure.
I think playing is the best way of learning. I do believe that at the quarterback position. Yeah. I do that. But as far as Green Bay goes, there is something to be said what Bunda brings up there, right? You had Brett Favre for whatever it was, 15 odd seasons as your guy. They draft Aaron Rodgers. He sits for, I think it ended up being 4 years. Takes over. He's been at the helm for what, a dozen years. Now you have Jordan Love. If you think he's the guy, and if they do hit on him, and he takes over a year from now or two years from now, if Rodgers sticks around that long, and you've got another guy for 15 years, can you know what other NFL team in history can say we've had 3 great quarterbacks that potentially could all win Super Bowls? The first two have.
No.
Right? And for half a century of football.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I would say, and you're right, hey, you look at certain guys that can hop in. But to that, and I'll say recently, like the plan the Kansas City Chiefs had with Alex Smith that was ahead of Mahomes.
Yeah, for 1 year.
And what you had in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson coming in and you still had Joe Flacco. I would say more times than not, and I appreciate that playing, but there's nothing like sports as being a quarterback in the National Football League. Your responsibility, your ability to comprehend and lead, I think that 1 year apprentice would serve every quarterback well, even the star guys.
I will say this, though. I think there is a difference when we're talking about the guy who's the top pick in the draft, and we're talking about, you know, Jordan Love ended up being, what was it, 23, 24, window.
For sure, yeah.
Like, we're talking about a guy who 23 other teams passed on, who didn't think he was, or either didn't need, or didn't think was their quarterback of the future.
Just like they did with Lamar Jackson.
Well, and trading up to go get him, right? Like, that's the other big thing, I think, too. When you show the interest that you want a guy just because he's there, like you said, the comments from LaFleur with, he was the highest rated guy on a draft board. It's like, you traded up. Like, you had a choice.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They waited. They wanted him. So it just kind of shows, like he says there, and you could see the bitterness of it when in his answer, like Zimmer said, that, you know, the young coach and his guy. Like, so he knows his days are numbered.
I think in Green Bay there was a lot of criticism of the pick because they feel like they're a team that is ready to kind of push it over the top. Right, yeah. Aaron Rodgers is 36. He's not getting any younger. And you've drafted a quarterback. Only one guy can play the position. It's like goalie, and you've got the guy already for that. And then in the second round, right? They drafted, I think, a running back, right? And they've already got a great running back, right? And so they've got nothing that fills their immediate need, and they need receivers. Well, how about this? Devin Funchess, who they signed in the offseason as, he's an okay talent, but he was somebody they're going to add to the wide receiver table. He announced yesterday he's opting out for playing in 2020. So the one guy they did add, the one offensive weapon, has decided to sit out the coming season.
Yeah, and any player, you're so practical. You get into the league, you want to establish yourself financially, you want to. Then you arrive at a certain point where financially you're in a pretty good spot. You feel like you're on a winning team. You're looking to management to add what will, as you just said, help you now to win, right? Not in reshuffling the deck with a player that's probably going to impact in 3 or 4 years.
By the way, can we have a moment, everybody? A moment for Myles Garrett, who spent about 10 days as the highest paid defensive player in all of football after he signed a 5-year, $125 million contract with the Cleveland Browns. Last night he got passed by Joey Bosa, who signed a 5-year, $135 million a year deal with the LA Chargers. So, you know what? Next guy up always gets a little more money. It's all in the timing, but Myles Garrett no longer are the highest paid defensive player.
Only wish that the Bosa family had more boys.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, what a treat to watch those guys play.
Oh, absolutely. And the San Francisco 49ers are going, oh, man. Because his younger brother, I think, is a better player. Even after 1 year, you can kind of see that. He is, if he can stay healthy, he is absolutely going to break the bank.
He's worth the price of admission, too, right?
Yeah. He's going to be, they got a couple more years three more years on his rookie deal, but he is going to sign a monster contract if he keeps trending the way he is. All right, we'll take a break, 9:50, come back. We'll do a little bit of this day in sports history, celebrate some birthdays before we turn things over to the boys from In the Box, coming up after 10 on TSN 1200. The 29th, and for Montreal Canadiens fans, was on this day in 1985 that Jean Perron was hired to replace Jacques Lemaire as head coach. Lemaire had resigned to become the assistant to Serge Savard and the director of hockey personnel. Of course, Jean Perron got off to a pretty good start, coached the Habs to the Stanley Cup in his first season, 85-86, but got fired, a couple of years after that.
Went from Hull over to a year in Sherbrooke, hopped in, and that 85 draft run by the late, great Andre Boudria, that was, remember that, watching that on TV, that was when Peter Svoboda just walked in, nobody knew he was even in town, had the Sens or the Habs jersey on,
right?
Probably about $1.50. I think would have drafted Shane Corson in the first round as well, and really had a nice draft in 84 and 85 with Richie and Patrick Waugh and a number of others.
On this day in 1993, the Tampa Bay Lightning signed Denny Savard as a free agent. Of course, he had won the Stanley Cup with the Habs, but didn't play for the most part in the playoffs. I have no memory of Denny Savard with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I remember the bad uniforms, and I remember the likes of, I thought, Gerard Gallant to that, Peter Klima mixed in with Roman Hammerlick, Mr. Bradley, Mr. Poop, and a few other guys that actually had one hell of a power play and a pretty good goaltender, but I don't recall him doing a whole lot. And he was pretty much not done, but that trade for Chris Chelios, certainly one-sided for the Chicago Blackhawks.
You want to talk about nothing happens in the summer in the NHL? On a July 29th in 1994, the LA Kings traded Luke Robitaille to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Rick Tocchet and a second rounder. Yeah. Now that is a monster deal.
Yeah, and for how popular he was at the time, and I don't remember much. I remember him being in Pittsburgh, but I actually think of him finishing off with Detroit and ended up winning a Stanley Cup, and now just a very popular guy in LA, kind of the face of the franchise with Rob Blake and a real class act.
Yeah, and Luke Robitaille was kind of seemingly running the business side of things with the Kings, but he's kind of moved into a hockey ops feel as well.
Yeah, a year into Rob Blake taking the job and signing Ilya Kovalchuk, the owner realized he had no idea what he was doing. So you bring in somebody else that has no experience. Together, you'll learn the way, and lots of mistakes will be made.
On this day in 1996, after about 20 years at the helm, Tommy Lasorda resigned as manager of the LA Dodgers. He had suffered a heart attack about a month earlier, got cleared to return, but ultimately decided not to.
Yeah. I discussed it with my wife, and it was a big, big decision. But I knew one thing, that I'm a very excitable guy. I'm not going to go down there and just sit around and not, as I told you this before, I'm going to go down there. If I'm going to put that uniform on, I'm going to be the Tommy Lasorda of old. I'm going to be hollering and arguing with umpires and screaming and everything like I do. I can't do that.
So there you go. Tommy Lasorda won 9 division titles with the Dodgers and 2 World Series, 81 and 88, which ended up being the last World Series the Dodgers have won.
Yeah, and as a, I guess, baseball fan, starting late 70s, early 80s, he was one of the faces of baseball. And for people you talk to, love the camera, love the attention, and sure, love being the manager of the Dodgers. The profile that had back in the day, with along with being the skipper of the Yankees, like these are iconic sports franchises at a time when baseball was the main event.
On this day in 2005, the New York Rangers announced the signing of Henrik Lundqvist, who they had drafted in the year 2000 in the 7th round. He came to camp, won the job, and as we know, the rest, as they say, is history. Thinking back to your time, you're in the NHL then. Was there a lot of buzz about Lundqvist coming to North America?
There was buzz by the time he got here, but certainly not over. And I remember watching him with Team Sweden and watching him play in Frölunda. He looked good, but I don't know. I guess to the point is that he's been such a passionate guy in his craft, works very hard at it. I don't think he's ever been about flash and dash, right? So, no, I didn't have the expectations. But, again, another guy, you talk about a class act. And I know some people are saying the Rangers are being disrespectful to him. Hey, when it comes to professional sports, there's no disrespect. You're a great player. He had his chances. I wish he had won a Stanley Cup, but it's not going to happen for him as a starter. Yeah,
he can look at his payday if he wants some respect.
Oh, he can just look at the mirror at himself.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if I'm having a bad day and I pop into the mirror and see that mullet,
it's all good.
Or that bucket, I'm good to go.
It's all good. Happy birthday today on this July 29th to Damon Allen, CFL Hall of Famer. Played for the Rough Riders. Super season 88 was a year to forget.
Yeah.
2-14, poor Damon Allen. Or 2-16, whatever it ended up being.
Yeah.
But a legendary Canadian Football League career, mostly with Edmonton and Toronto, I think he's best remembered for. BC, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
But Damon Allen turns 57 today.
Yeah, and for me, best remembered for being the brother of Marcus Allen. To me, one of the most electrifying players to ever play the game, and how he was somehow intertwined with OJ and Nicole Simpson back in the day. Yep.
Dak Prescott turns 27 today. He's having to make do with a $27 million or $31 million payday for the coming year as he remains unsigned long-term by the Dallas Cowboys. Our hockey birthdays today, we'll quickly go through that. Dave Cameron is 62 today. The he played 125 NHL games back in the early 80s with the Devils and the then Rockies.
Yeah.
I didn't know, Simmer, did you know that Dave Cameron was traded by the Islanders to the Rockies in exchange for a number one draft pick, along with Bob Lorham, I should say, was
okay.
Right? And the number one draft pick turned out to be Pat LaFontaine.
No way.
Yes.
Oh, no, I had no idea.
Dave Cameron was an 8th round pick, got traded with Bob Lorham and for a number one pick.
Wow.
And then only played 125 NHL games.
And that's when Bill Torrey would have been looking to rebuild and Pat was going to be the face of the franchise. That's also a draft year when Detroit wanted to draft a local boy, had to settle on Stevie Eiserman. But wow. I guess there's a reason why the Rockies ended up moving. That was a starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, Dave Cameron coached the Sens for a couple of years. Tyler Johnson of the Lightning is 30. I got to think he's going to end up playing for Seattle, right? He's going to go to the expansion team.
Well,
he's from Washington
State. Yeah, I mean, he's got the no movement. The question is, I don't think that they're looking to do Tampa Bay any favors. And is that a bit of a help for Seattle? It's a possibility, but I don't think you're going to be, like I said, you're not going to dump him on if he's still got something left. No, it could be a starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. Clayton Keller turns 22 of the Coyotes. And
disappointing year he had, eh?
Yeah. Last 2 years.
Yeah.
You got to wonder. He's got the big contract now. The numbers have kind of fallen off a little bit, but again, that's not necessarily a great team that he's on. And this would have been the birthday as well of Ted Lindsay, who was born in Renfrew from back in the day, of course. Terrible Ted Lindsay from back in his Detroit Red Wing days. NHL Hall of Famer and had the award named after him. What used to be the Pearson Award is now the Ted Lindsay Award, for the best National Hockey League player as voted by his peers. Ted Lindsay would have celebrated a birthday today, passed away last year.
Yeah.